Through the study, we saw that people had 10 times different responses to food. What they ate was not the key thing. It was also how they ate that mattered. The more data you have about a person, the more you understand where they are, but also you can understand where they're going and provide much better insights and advice. I was getting more confused and I was asking myself the question, you know, could it be that everything we've been told about food was wrong?
Excellent. George, it's good to see you again. I'm excited to do this discussion together. With Zoe, you have an exceptional journey. And also, before, you have done some of the best startups in Greece and also around the world too. So excited to have this discussion. So why don't we start by the story of Zoe, the founding journey? How do you meet your co-founders at the beginning? And then about the story of Zoe.
Great to see you again, Kyriako. And of course, in the story of Zoe, we said something, which is that the name Zoe is a Greek name. It comes from the Greek word Zoe, which means life. And it's very synonymous of this vision we have of the world, of people not being just alive and ticking along every day, but people living life and living life for longer with 10 extra healthy years of life. So I'll talk more about that. I think the story goes back to somewhere around 7 to 8 years ago. I had personally sold my last two companies and I was taking a break, and I reconvened with my friend Jonathan Wolf, whom I've known for 20 years. He's my co-founder now. And we took a trip together, and through that trip, we discovered that we shared a common passion around health and around the role that nutritional lifestyle plays in our health. In my case, I had recently started doing more tests, and I found that I had about half a kilo of fat in and around my organs. I was what people call toffee, which is thin outside, fat inside. And I had also had high cholesterol levels, and I was a bit alarmed.
Was this through blood sample, by the way? Was it through blood or some other?
So the fat was through a DEXA scan, and the cholesterol levels was through a classic blood test.
What gave you do a DEXA scan? Did you visit a doctor, or was it from a personal interest?
It was a personal interest. I was just reading. I had just taken a sabbatical. I was trying to get my life and my health back in order, so I started to do different tests, and I discovered I had this problem, which I never knew anything about before. I went to the doctors and some of the best doctors in London. And the one thing that they gave me was a leaflet from the Heart Foundation around nutrition. And I was quite surprised back then. I said, okay, I have these problems, and the only thing I get is a leaflet. And I started researching. I started asking questions to myself about whether the advice that is in these leaflets is accurate. And I saw there was advice around eggs being bad for your cholesterol. And I remember my grandmother was telling me when I was a young kid in Greece, don't eat eggs because they're bad for your cholesterol. So I started researching, and to my surprise, I found that this advice on eggs was based on just a few studies that happened decades ago. One of these studies, for example, was a study in 1972 on just 12 men. Six of these 12 men had high cholesterol levels before the study began. And also, even more alarmingly, the study didn't account about anything that these 12 people were eating during the study. So they gave them eggs to eat to measure the impact of cholesterol, but they didn't record or account in their analysis whether these people were drinking a lot of alcohol at the same time or eating bacon, etc. And That study came out with this big finding that cholesterol is very bad, or eggs are very bad for your cholesterol and whatnot. And so I started researching, I started reading, and the more I was reading and the more I was approaching the problem from first principles, the more alarmed I was getting, the more confused. And I was asking myself the question, could it be that everything we've been told about food was wrong? And Jonathan, my partner, had exactly the same journey and questions. He had a different problem in terms of sensitivities in his gut since his early 20s. And at some point, we read Tim's book, The Diet Myth, which is an incredible book. And that opened my mind to this kind of beautiful world of gut microbes. Up until that point, I only was associating microbes as being these bad things. And actually, quite the contrary, these microbes are this wonderful ecosystem of trillions of bacteria that's so beneficial for our health, for our immune system, and so forth. And we happened to see a talk about Tim and the work that he's been doing over the last 30 years on twins. Tim had a similar journey as well, and he's been studying twins because twins is a perfect control group to do studies on. And he was studying twins to understand the differences between nature and nurture towards health, towards different lifestyle diseases, towards obesity, etc. And he discovered that although twins were identical in terms of the DNA, so they were exact clones of each other, they only shared a third of the bacteria in their gut, and that turned out to be a key reason why some of them had different paths in terms of the health that trajectory they were following, whether they were developing diseases, whether one of the two was more able to be thinner versus not. So he actually focused his research on the gut microbiome. So the founding story was really around the three of us recognizing that we had a very common problem, which is we all had these different health concerns, and we were not satisfied around the answer we're getting around the question, what should we individually do in terms of our lifestyle, in terms of our nutrition, to be in control of our health. So we decided to solve this problem together. And I think the key innovation in what we try to do with Zoe is to utilize an approach that up until that point, and maybe even today, was quite revolutionary. I call this power to the people. And what I mean by that is by giving the people the chance, the average consumer, to participate in what we hope to be and is already the largest ongoing study and data collection around nutrition, lifestyle, and the microbiome in the world. By getting people to get involved in that and by expanding the data set, we would be able to gather a lot of data and then develop great personalized health solutions to help everybody in the world extend their healthy years of life by giving them new personalized health insights and advice. And even solutions to help them extend their healthy years of life. So that was the genesis of Zoe. And it builds upon a thesis and a belief we have that although over the last 100 years, we've been able as a society to increase life expectancy by eradicating contagious diseases like tuberculosis and meningitis and whatnot, what has happened was at the same time, there's been a huge proliferation of lifestyle diseases like diabetes, heart disease. And our belief is that most people in the world can extend their healthy years of life by a decade if they were able to take proactive, personalized action around the health decades before these lifestyle diseases arise. And that's why we started Zoe, is to give people this access, this power back, these keys to their health with this kind of new innovative product, which is a personalized health coach that helps everyone extend their healthy years of life.
George, you mentioned that with Jonathan, you read the book of Tim. But actually, how did you speak to Tim? Did you reach out over LinkedIn, for example, or how did you approach that?
A great question. We saw a speech that Tim gave along with other scientists, and then we were really impressed by the work he had done. So we reached out to people we knew that may be connected to him, as you do as an entrepreneur, you try different avenues. And fortunately for us, one of our now investors and friend connect us with Tim and made this connection happen. And of course, when Tim first met us, he didn't know us, he didn't know our background or our track record. So he was very skeptical, but luckily for us, he agreed to come on the journey with us. And I'm sure he's one of the most respected and cited scientists in the world and a wonderful human being. And we are so glad that he's our partner.
Yeah, that's incredible. And you all three come together, and then I can see that the approach from the beginning is different than the usual approach of let's build something small and let's get it to the market. From my understanding about Zoe today, you raised a lot of funds and you took the opposite approach, which is all about the science first, building the science, there.
Precisely. So
can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that comes back to the values we had as founders. All of us in different ways, we had some impact in our prior endeavors. And one of the things that was really important for all of us is to have a real impact in the world and to do things in the right way, even if it was the hard way. So from the very beginning, we said, we really want to do something very innovative around the science. We want to do real science. And that was one of the conditions for Tim to join as well, and very rightly. But that's also what Jonathan and I want to do. And rather than start, and that's 6-7 years ago, rather than start by launching a product, getting a CGM and offering it to the market, we decided to go to the hospital, the actual hospital, St. Thomas Hospital. That's where the company started. And to first license this amazing research that Tim has been doing on twins for 30 years. And build upon it by launching what at that time was called Predict, now it's called Predict One, which is this kind of start of this ongoing study, this ongoing project to collect the largest amount of data around the microbiome, nutrition, lifestyle, etc. in the world, in order to collect a data set that allows us to understand how people respond differently to food, how people are different, how their lifestyles are different, and use a data set together with AI to be able to predict for any individual how any food, any way of eating and living impacts their health real time. So that's the reason we went back to the hospital. And I'll share a funny story that I like to cite to show how naive we were, and particularly myself, when we started that endeavor. So we said, we're gonna do this study with 1,000 people, 700 of them twins. Typically, the studies Kyriakos are on 20 people because these are like real intervention studies. In our case, it was a 14-day intervention study where we collected so much data from the DNA to the microbiome, people wearing a CGM, they were eating set meals for a number of days. We had them in the hospital for a day to take blood through a catheter through 10 or 11 different time points to measure insulin, to measure the triglycerides rise, to measure the glucose rise, metabolomics, name it, right? So very intense study, typically done only on 20 people, if at all. And in this case, we said 1,000. All the scientists thought we were crazy, and probably we were. And the funny story is that we had never done a clinical trial ourselves, ever. So we asked the scientists, what team do we need to build? And they told us, I said, hey guys, the first person you need to bring on board is RO. Jonathan and I looked at each other, said, CRO, like chief revenue officer, we have zero revenues, like it's only cost. what do you mean? And of course, they were talking about the people who are used to be running these clinical trials in what are called the CRO organizations. And to cut the long story short, we interviewed a bunch of people, and maybe it's the people that we met, but we ourselves in the eyes at the end of the interviewing and said, we think we can do that better. And I think that's one of the interesting kind of lessons in entrepreneurship, or our naivete maybe as an entrepreneur, where you approach a problem you don't know nothing about, or an industry nothing about, is that we thought about the problem from first principles. And by using our experience and approach in building startups, we treat a clinical study and a clinical study of that size as a startup, and we're able to complete it, I would say, at a fifth or sixth of the time it would have taken other people, probably a tenth of the cost, and probably with much superior results than they would have got. And that was a fun experience, and that was the genesis of the approach. And from the very beginning, we said, we're gonna do this clinical study, then we're going to do a similar version of that. We called it a semi-commercial product. It was a clinical study that was similar to the first one, a bit more, less intense, but at home and in the US. So in that way, we proved that we can do the studies at home, in effect, do the testing part of our product at home. And that's the evolution of the study and the product that goes from something that's very intense to something less intense, very similar to how Tesla has developed their cars from way more expensive and complicated to much simpler and less expensive.
Mm. So with these studies, your goal was, one, to aggregate all that information, and then the end goal was what?
The goal was, first of all, to collect this data and study and understand what's happening. Because after that date, the understanding around the individuality of people around nutrition and health was not as well as understood. For example, through the study, we saw that people had 10 times different responses to food. When I say response, I mean their blood sugar rises, their triglyceride rises, their insulin rises. They had a tenfold differences, right? What they ate was not the key thing. It was also how they ate that mattered, right? How they ate and they lived. We saw that even twins were identical, store only 31% or 35% of the bacteria in common versus unrelated individuals like ourselves, who may store like a third of a bacteria in common. So the first thing was really to understand what's happening around our individuality, so we can study that. And then by collecting this data set, then the end goal was to apply machine learning and be able to translate that into something actionable for the consumer. And our personalized scores around food is that actionable endpoint. So for example, after you do the tests in our product, each individual gets a personalized score for any food, any combination of food, any recipe, any way of eating that food in a day, with fasting, without fasting, the timing, any combination of lifestyle and food. And that end output, that end score, is based on a prediction of how that food or that lifestyle will impact your gut bacteria, will impact your blood sugar levels, will impact your triglyceride levels. And that algorithm that feeds that score is based on this data set that started, again, as I said, with 15,000 people, the twins, yep, in team study. Then we added 1,000 people in predict one, another 1,000 people in predict two. And now this study is in the hundreds of thousands, because with every member that joins Zoe, their data becomes part, of course, with their consent, part of this huge study, and allows them and every new member and every other member to benefit with more breakthrough science. The other part of why we did the study is, and we still keep doing the studies, is that allows us with more and more data to generate new breakthrough science and insights that then we feed back to the product. I'll give an example. Through the first few thousand of participants in our studies, we found that there were 30 bacteria, we call them 15 good bacteria and 15 bad bacteria, that were correlated and anti-correlated with various health conditions, and that comprised our first Zoe Gut Health Score, which to our knowledge was one of the kind of best ways to characterize your wellness of your microbiome. So it's a different approach to, for example, the gut diversity, which after that point had been the most popular method of assessing part of the health of the microbiome. Yeah. If you fast forward a few years, with more than 100,000 members, we rerun that analysis and we found that there are 100 bacteria, 50 good and 50 bad, of which this initial 30 were part of, but not all of them in that rank, that were correlated and uncorrelated with health. And we used that to refresh our Zoe Gut Health Score and give that back, that insight, that latest science back to every member. And the interesting thing is that a lot of these bacteria in this list of 100 bacteria were never characterized before. They didn't even have names, right? Because only about 80% of the gut microbiome has ever been characterized and said, oh, this bacteria has this name, usually in Latin names, in italics, right? So that was the second objective, is that with this ongoing data collection, we can do continuous science and deliver new breakthrough insights in our product through better and predictive insights around where your health is today and where it's going, but also better advice in terms of what to do to improve your health, prevent lifestyle diseases, extend your healthy years of life.
George, this is very interesting from so many perspectives, but one of them is that for so many years I've been seeing everybody speaking about nutrition, having a different opinion. Some people are speaking about high carbohydrates, for example, high fat or high protein and so on, and different trends over time. But from what it sounds here is that you run the biggest study out there to go and examine and be very scientific about it. And you inform that study all the times and improves over time to give very specific recommendations to people, which is very unlike of what I heard before.
Yes, exactly. And that's the problem we faced. We heard keto is good or keto is bad. Protein is good or protein is bad. This is good, this is bad. And at the end of the day, you do know what to do. You are in a paralysis. You're confused. You don't know who to trust. And we said, all right, how can we turn this problem into something that is an opportunity for people to be healthier? And it all starts with information. So if I tell you, hey, Kiriakou, this is exactly what's happening in you. This is exactly how you respond to carbohydrates. You respond to fats, right? This is exactly how your gut microbiome is. And I'll tell you, hey, I won't tell you how much or how little to eat, but I'll give you the keys. I'll give you the keys to your body. I'll give you the method to understand how each decision you're going to make around food, around what to eat, around how to eat, or how to live will impact your health. And in that way, I'll give you back the keys. I'll give you the locks of control to make your own decisions. Then that becomes a wonderful solution because you don't need to trust anymore and look who to trust. You actually trust your body and what your body tells you, right? So we turned this problem from one where the locks of control was in the system, whatever you Googled, whatever its doctor, its person, or its influencer is telling you, to something where you are in control. You're getting the keys of what your body is telling you, and then you're responsible for making decisions based on that knowledge.
And George, when say you finish these studies, and then how did you decide about the product? As in, how do you decide about the samples that you're going to be taking from people, and how did you approach that?
Yeah, so from the very beginning, we work with the best scientists. Of course, Tim leads our scientific advisory board, and we believe that in order to give the best predictions for health, we needed to start with to study three things, which was around the gut microbiome, the kind of metabolic response to food in terms of the blood sugar response to food, and also something that was less studied up at that point, which was like the kind of triglycerides responses or how good you are in clearing the fats in the 6 to 8 hours after you eat a meal. So that was like really based on a lot of scientific research that team, but also a number of other leading scientists, including Sarah Berry, our chief science officer, have done over the years. And the funny thing is that when we started and we had this like three tests, which was a stool sample for the microbiome, a continuous glucose monitor for the blood sugar responses, and a finger prick test for the triglycerides, measurement of triglycerides after you eat a metabolic meal. Everybody at that point, like 6 years ago, 7 years ago, told us that you will never be able to get people to give you a stool sample. That we will never get people, be able to convince people to give us a stool sample. And I do remember our answer back at that point, and apologies if I'm being a bit graphic, was, hang on a second, right? Like, we're all going to the toilet. Like, everybody in this world is going to go to the toilet on average, let's call it once a day, pretty much, right? So 365 days a year. It's the most natural thing people do in life, right? Why they will not give us a stool sample, right? Why not, right? And it turns out, actually, the stool sample was no problem at all. It's something that now hundreds of thousands of people have given us a stool sample, and it's something we didn't ever get negative feedback on. In fact, the thing that we got the most negative feedback on was the finger prick blood test, because it turns out that people, particularly people like myself, hate to do a finger prick blood test because just the idea of pricking your fingers is terrible. So the design of the test was done by our scientists, and of course many people were skeptical whether we'll be able to convince people to do the test, but in the end I think we've proven that was not a problem. And it all comes back to the reason why it's not a problem, which is that people are really left behind in terms of understanding what's happening in their bodies. People are really left behind in being confused about different advice they get from influencers or from Dr. Google or from people trying to give them kind of medicine based on outdated protocols, like the leaflet I had when I visited a doctor. And by giving them this insight, this information, and this personalized advice based on their body, we are, I believe, for the first time, allowing people to really take back control and be on top of their health.
And then how did you get people to learn about Zoe at the beginning and get people to do the tests in the first place?
So we started to develop our product, and that was in 2018 to 19. And as we were starting to develop the product, a thing called COVID happened. So it was March 2020, and we're still developing the product. We hadn't launched yet the product, and we're starting with the US in mind, and COVID happened, and my co-founder, Tim Spector, had this wonderful idea. He said, all right, we're utilizing this amazing approach where we collect data from people to give them great insights and advice based on new breakthrough science. This is like a moment in history that we may not see again. We need to help people. Why don't we develop an app to study what the symptoms people have on COVID so we can understand them and then help people to protect themselves, not get hospitalized, not die? And we thought it was a wonderful idea and something that was very synonymous to the values and the approach we're using in terms of having impact to the world. And we put a small team together, and in 5 days, and I'm sure our CTO remembers that he didn't sleep for two nights in that in that period, we launched an app called the Zoe COVID Symptom Study, which we launched in the UK on March the 26th, if I remember, of either 24th, 26th. And after 2 days, it became viral with 1 million people after a day, 2 million after 2 days.
How did people learn about it at the beginning?
It was a point in time where the world was in crisis, right? It was like people were hearing the news from Italy. People were dying. If you remember, in northern Italy, older people were dying, unfortunately. And everybody was trying to figure out what's happening. People were very worried about the health. So it was a way to get, again, back to the part of the people, to get people to contribute by recording the symptoms. And by recording the symptoms, we're able to study whether which symptoms were the ones that were leading to COVID, because then people will report whether they got COVID, whether they got hospitalized, and we're able to complete that loop. And they felt that by doing something, they can benefit the wider public, but also get back information that can help them protect and prevent themselves from getting COVID, dying, etc. So it was the right thing at the right time. We also had a sharing mechanism that people used to survey. I remember people shared it virally via WhatsApp or Twitter or Facebook. And the wonderful thing is that this became the largest ever community science project around COVID, with more than 5 million contributors, mainly in the UK, a little bit in Sweden, a little bit in the US. And it led to a number of breakthrough insights. So this was the study and the app that substantiated scientifically first that anosmia, the lack of smell and taste, was a key symptom for, and that also then led a number of different governments, including the UK government, to put it in the official list of symptoms. It also was one of the few studies to, and the first studies to study the efficacy of vaccines. So we did this big study on vaccines where we could see how long the efficacy will last, depending on what vaccine you took, AstraZeneca versus Pfizer versus Moderna, in what sequence. And that led people to be able to know for how long a vaccine will last and as a result protect themselves at the time. Now, of course, that's all less relevant because we're going to the other side of this. But back then, we feel very proud that not only contributed with insights, we contributed with new kind of science and breakthroughs, but through our work, a number of different kind of media took the news and the insights from our work, published them in different parts of the world, and people, particularly older people who were reading the news, they were able to benefit from this insight, being lack of smell or taste or being the efficacy of their vaccines, and get the comfort and the peace of mind that they know what they're doing to protect themselves. I was cited the example that my dad one day called me and said, oh, I learned in the paper that the vaccines will last for 5 months. And so, you know, I need to be careful or I need to go and get another vaccine. And when I asked him to show me the article, it was an article that was based on our data, right? So the knowledge that you have impacted human beings in that level with that peace of mind and confidence of what to do to protect themselves in different parts of the world is something that it's wonderful, and I think goes back to the impact that all three of us want to have when we started the company. So that's what happened, and that's what led to Zoe, particularly in the UK, becoming a quite well-known brand based on something that we decided to do in the spur of the moment, pro bono, just to help.
That's incredible. So that's a big growth hack based on the point in time, huh?
Yeah, we never thought about a grow hack. We said, okay, we need to do this. Yeah, we never knew that's going to be successful. We never thought that it's going to be so viral. and it turned out to be, and we just did it because we cared. And at some point then we focused back in, COVID had waves, we focused back in, started building our nutrition, our personalized nutrition product, and we decided to launch it initially in the UK, in the US, but then we focused really on the UK because we felt that in the UK that we had a lot of traction, a lot of awareness, and because of that, and because of the trust and the credibility we had built around the science at the time of COVID, the credibility Tim Spector, my co-founder, had built around that as well, we felt that would be the right market to double down and focus first.
Another question I wanted to ask you, George, is about data in general, more specifically about, we can't see today about before, and then also we have more and more sensors coming to the market. I've seen the CGM devices that you are using with Zoe. Like being in Terra, like we're speaking all the times with new devices from temperature monitoring and blood pressure monitoring and lactate monitoring that are coming to the market now. What do you think about new data points and what's your approach at Zoe with them?
So I believe over the medium term, we're going to start integrating more and more data from different parts of our lifestyle and also from different systems together in order to develop more holistic insights and then also more holistic advice. I would say we're in the early phases of that, not because this cannot happen today, but because I think the infrastructure, first of all, is quite disjointed. For example, to get your blood test when you go to a hospital or when you go to a doctor and then that fitting through an API into your solution, that's quite disjointed today. So it requires a lot of work. Some of the data points are newer in terms of understanding the impact. For example, I was wearing the 24/7 blood pressure monitor. You get some interesting data, but it's not clear yet. For example, how your nutrition on a daily basis, real-time basis, impacts this data. And also, I think we require a lot more work in terms of not only integrate these different data sources, but then also analyzing the insight you get out of them and then the impact. So we are in the early phase of that. So it's something that strategically is definitely something we're thinking about, because at the end of the day, if you go back to what you're doing, we're a personalized health coach that provides you with the best personalized health insights of where your health is today and where it's going, right? And the best advice around what to do and the solutions then to easily implement it. The more data you have about a person, the more you understand where they are, but also you can understand where they're going and provide much better insights and advice. So definitely something we're thinking about a lot, and something that I see is going to happen more and more. But I think the two key problems that people like yourself are solving, but also others, is around A, the infrastructure of getting the data together, and B, around the understanding of how these different, what these different data mean, and to give like actionable insights and advice. And that's why we're playing very well, because we're running these huge clinical studies all the time as part of this ongoing study. So we're well positioned to really start understanding the insights and generating advice.
Yeah. George, when it comes to fundraising, you have raised with your previous companies as well successfully multiple times, now at Zoe as well. But the approach this time, I believe, was different in a way that we spoke about science. And then what's the approach here, and how do you approach investors when it comes to telling them, you know what, we are going to do really big scientific experiments where when their expectation is they want extremely high growth very early on. So how did you approach that? And how did you manage to raise significant funds?
Exactly as I mentioned to you in the beginning, we went to them with a quite big vision of the world that we see, the world where you have this kind of proactive, personalized health insights, health advice, and solutions to be in control of your health, extend your healthy years in life, and an approach that's based on this kind of ongoing study that the deficit increases with every member. And we said, hey, to do that, we need first to build the science. We'll do it for real. And these are the milestones. So what I mentioned in terms of the first study and the second study was all part of our initial plan. And luckily for us, we had a track record before. So we went to people that we knew and trust, and we've been very blessed to have wonderful investors, both institutional investors, but also angel investors that believed us from the beginning of the journey and have been very supportive in our journey, even at the time of COVID, where many investors could have said something different. But all our investors really doubled down and supported us in doing the right thing for the world. But at the end of the day, started all with a very clear long-term vision of how we see the world, a very ambitious plan that you can build in decades, but at the same time, also very clear milestone of what you're going to be built in the weeks and months and years to come to get to that big vision.
Yeah. So would you say that did you have many rejections at this point, or based on your track record, investors were much more keen to do?
We didn't have. We went well. We're able to close our rounds quite fast, and that was based on the, as I said, the approach, the track record, the team, and also the climate was very different. The climate is now. We also believe this is a very big idea. We've always said that Joy is a company that we can be building for decades, and because healthcare is one of these areas that has been long either forgotten or not full of great solutions and services. And definitely we see a world where we can give so much more to the average person. And we already see the impact of that. I think one of the things that we hear at Zoe from members is they say, Zoe changed my life, which for me as a Greek, and I'm sure you can relate to that, when you hear people say, Zoe changed my life, like life changed my life, it's like something like it gives me a huge smile and a huge satisfaction. And I think that's exactly what we want to do. I think people are really crying for help in terms of understanding, in terms of being able to apply the right advice to improve the health. So yep. I think that's the other thing. We had a big vision in an area where there's a big opportunity for disruption. And I think that's part of the story that helps also to together with a great team, together with track record, together with a coherent plan, it helps to raise money easier than not.
Yeah, excellent. When it comes to the team, you mentioned the team a few times. We spoke earlier about being remote as well. I would really like to hear your ideas about how does the team look like today in Zoe? And also, what are the important things for entrepreneurs to know about team building?
Let me start first with the culture, and then I'll talk about the team, because we have been very intentional around culture, and culture for us is something we treat like a product. We think it's our second product, and even probably the most important product, because with the right culture, you can build anything. So we've been very intentional about culture from the very, very beginning, and culture not in terms of the aspirations, in terms of kind of airy-fairy words of what culture could feel, but more importantly around the operating behaviors that we want to celebrate, and also the operating behaviors that we don't tolerate. Because culture is not only what you celebrate, but as importantly, what you don't tolerate. And as a result, that gave us a compass in terms of the types of people that we wanted to hire. And because the people together with you is what the culture is. The people and their actions that you celebrate and you don't tolerate is what creates the culture. It's what you do that creates the culture. So we've been very intentional on that. We've made mistakes along the way, as one does. I would say that if we are to describe the people, I would say it is ambitious. People are ambitious. They want to create something that is great for the world. They are positive, and we have this value called positive diverse, which is a wonderful value because we want diversity, we want different types of people, different types of thinking, different types of backgrounds, but we want to bring them together in a positive way, in a way where one builds upon each other. There's friction. Friction is not bad, it's good. But positive friction is even greater because in that way you can rub the rocks to create beautiful stones, as Steve Jobs used to say, and that's the true nature of collaboration. So we bring people who are positive, diverse, to try to collaborate, but in a way that has friction has constructive disagreement and evolution to build something greater. So this is a key part of our culture. It's quite honest, our culture. We're very transparent. We say we're transparent, especially when it's hard. It's easy to be transparent when it's easy, but being transparent when it's hard is what's really important. We're also quite big in diving deep, both in terms of the depth of our solutions and also ensuring that the scientific rigor is there, because what we do is really important. It has to do with people's health and people's lives. And when you are in the health sector, you don't realize, but every word you put in the service, every color in your app can impact people in a quite profound way. A health result that's red versus orange, that can have a big difference to people. And people sometimes don't underestimate how big of an impact it has. So we're diving deep to actually be able to take a customer-first approach and deliver something that is true to what we want to help our members with. And the last I would say is it's a fun culture. People I like to hang out with each other, have fun. And in general, I'm very proud of the team we built. I think the team is very proud of the culture we built. And it's all part of an objective we have with our culture, which is to make Zoe an incredible place to be, where people come and they're empowered and motivated to do the best work of their lives.
Yeah. George, how does one test for these traits through an interview?
This is something continuously evolving. We have long used a behavioral approach in terms of understanding with open-ended questions that we use as primers, then we dive deeper to understand these traits. And with various iterations around that, because it's not easy. I would say the other thing that's quite important, I think there is quite a debate in the world around whether one should do it or how should we do it, is referencing. I believe a lot in the power of referencing around these traits for a very simple reason. If I ask you about somebody you worked with for 4 years, your data points are four years more than the data points I have. And I would say the last thing is my biggest mistakes in terms of hiring is whenever I didn't say hell yeah when I was ready to hire somebody and I hired them, it was a mistake. So being able to say hell yeah is probably one of the biggest hacks in terms of knowing, at least for me, whether something will work out or not.
Yeah. If we can get a bit more specific, can you, if we take Ambitious, for example, and you want to test with open-ended questions, someone, as you mentioned, about their ambition, like, how would you go about it?
Ambition is an interesting one, because there I have a quite controversial question, which is around, tell me about your family. Tell me about your childhood. And I would go into understanding this person's childhood, because I believe that ambition is something that is partially related to a person's childhood, how they grew up. What are the things that they still want to prove and achieve? And so this one is something where I would focus on their kind of early childhood. I would focus a lot in understanding their biggest mistakes or biggest learnings, in understanding kind of what they've learned and how they would use it next time around. So I would focus on more behavioral things that lead me to understand what is there that this person wants to prove. And prove maybe a bit of a loaded word, and why? What drives this person? Why? And I think it all stems back to, again, to experiences typically in the childhood and maybe after that they left the mark, they left something that a gap that a person still needs to fill. And that's how I would go about it. Yeah.
Do this, like when you set these values down at the very beginning, I would guess that when you have 10 people versus when you have 100 people, those values are different in the behavior of people under scale. Would you say that this is the case? And does this evolve as the companies?
So if you ask me now, I have a slightly different view than when we started Zoe. So when we started Zoe, we started with the values. We wrote the values down as more, as I said, as aspirations. Then we moved them to behaviors a year and a half down the line when we're more people. And we did that in a co-creation way with the different people in the company. So we'll co-create these values and operating behaviors. If you ask me now, I would start with those from the very, very beginning, because from the very, very first day, I would set out exactly what are the operating behaviors that you want to have in a company, what you celebrate them, what you don't tolerate, as I said, and then hire accordingly and bring the first 10, 20, 30 people you're going to bring. To a large extent, they're going to shape the culture. And particularly when you have a leadership team formed, that is basically what really saves the culture, because like we say in Greece, like the kind of fish stinks from the top and their behaviors and actions like permeate throughout the organization. So I would say, you know, when you look at subscale, for me, it's the opportunity to really define and be very clear in terms of what you celebrate or what you don't tolerate. And that's good, right? The values at the end of the day is a set of choices and prioritization about what's important for you and what's not important for you. And it's okay to make the choice. And the earlier you make the choice, the more clear you are on the what and the why, the faster you can actually get to create the culture you want.
Yeah. George, how did you learn about installing these values at the very beginning of the company? Did you do a mistake earlier, like in your previous companies, and you noticed it from that? Or yes, was it very intentional from the beginning?
Tons of mistakes. Tons of mistakes around culture, tons of mistakes around hiring, but a lot of learning. And the key mistake that I made in the past was that I was disillusioned with this idea that values is the five words you put on the wall of a company, and the fact that by getting people to remember them, everybody knows those values, and they're simple, they're short, and everybody remembers them and is able to behave by. And I think the hard lesson that I learned is that, yes, people can remember the values, but A, people may have a very different interpretation of what the value really means in practical reality and how they behave and operate, right? And as a result, what you intend to achieve is actually not being implemented in practice. In practice, the values and the culture become something very different. Culture and values is what Kyriakos will say to George when George joins the first day in the office and they see each other at the water cooler, and George says, "Hey, Kyriakos, what's happening in this company? How do things work and how can I be successful?" That's what culture is in practice. It's not what you put in the poster. And that was a hard reality that I learned. And then, of course, I'm a very curious learner. So I read a lot. I spoke to a lot of people. I read all the books around culture, from Netflix to Amazon to Ben Horowitz's book.
Which of them is your favorite, by the way?
All of them in different ways. I like, if I had to pick only one, I would say it's Ben Horowitz's book, because it has a lot of history in there and explanations. But all of them are incredible in their ways. I love Amazon because you may like or not like their culture, but one, and I definitely respect the fact that their system of defining the culture is something that has scaled to very large numbers of people. And again, you may like or dislike the culture of Amazon, but what I'm focusing on is the how they define the culture in terms of this kind of leadership behaviors and principles, and are able to scale that in terms of very large numbers of people. So these are the lessons you learn the hard way, and then you see that other people have learned them the hard way, they found different solutions to that, and you evolve. And I think that's an interesting thing. Sometimes you need to learn things on your own and have a visceral experience to be able to take the next step and take a different approach. Sometimes people will tell you something or you read something and intellectually you'll understand it, but until viscerally you experience why that is a better solution, you may not do it. And that by itself is actually something I'm quite passionate about, because I do believe there's a better way to learning and education in a more visceral way than just intellectual way.
George, it's the last question I wanted to ask you. I usually don't ask this kind of question, but since we are both Greeks, I wanted to see your opinion. If you could ever build Zoe in Greece, what are the things that are lacking? And if you could change them, you would actually do it there.
I don't think there's anything lacking in terms of building a service like ours in Greece. It's just a matter, in our case, of prioritization in terms of the markets we're focusing on. And in our case, the entering a new market with our current product requires more work and more investments. So Greece is lower on the priority list. I don't think there's anything lacking in terms of building a business in Greece. I've managed to build businesses in Greece, and particularly in times of a big crisis. At the end of the day, entrepreneurship is something that is all about the mindset and the will to take risks, the will to fail, pivot, change, evolve. And that for me is universal. And as long as you have that mindset and attitude, you can do it pretty much in any market, because you'll find there's always a solution. There's always a problem. There's always a solution. And it may be different, but you'll find it. And I would say that the one thing that Greeks or people in Greece have to their benefit is that they're in a small country, they're hustlers, because they have to hustle to make ends meet, and they learn to not hear no as no, but hear no as not yet. So they're able to be resilient, persistent, etc. And that's actually what led me to do what I do. So I would say the DNA is there, but it's more about create the mindset that you can use that DNA to solve any problem that's lacking for people that sometimes are not taking the plunge to build a company in Greece or whatnot. But I would say that for me, as I see it, like for Zoe or any other company, there's absolutely no barrier to do that, because as I said, with the right mindset and approach, you can solve any problem pretty much any country.
Excellent. And George, this has been a very insightful conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Kyriakou, and congrats on what you've been building with Terra.